Thanks, guys. What's up? My name's Drew, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to open up with a prayer. It goes like this. God, please keep me focused. Keep me honest. And if there's anyone in this room that thinks that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous might not work for them, please open up their minds to this message. Amen. Okay, so I'm going to say the word God a lot. So who has a problem with God? Raise your hand. I know there's some people out there. No? Good, because that's who I'm talking to. I hated God. You know, I always ask people, do you not believe in God or do you hate God? What is it? And a lot of people just don't believe in God. And I understand that, you know, because I didn't believe in God when I got here either. And that's a big part of my story. So I say the word God a lot. And if it offends anybody, I want you to remember, it's just kind of, to me, it's like saying the word jungle. You know, when you hear the word jungle, you think of army ants, you think of monkeys, big foliage, Amazon jungle. I mean, whatever you think of when I say the word jungle, that's what goes through your mind. When I say the word God, however you are programmed as a kid, that's what you think. But if you didn't know English, and if I said the word jungle to you, you might take offense to it. You might actually think that I was starting a fight. Maybe. So when I say God, I don't know what else to call it. I wake up in the morning, I turn my will and my life over to the care of a God, to the care of God that I can't comprehend. And so that's it. We got that out of the way. Everyone cool? Okay, so let's get into it. This is my story. I'm just going to qualify really quick. It's not really important what I did, but it's important to know how I felt and who I thought I was. So I was a light flip switcher. I'd walk up and I'd go 1, 2, 3 with the lights. I'd walk back and I'd go 1, 2, 3. And then I would get this thought that, man, if I just did it 3 more times, it would be 3, 3 of 3. So I'd run back over to the light and I'd go 1, 2, 3. And I'd walk away and I'd be like, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And I'd be like, man, if I just do that one more time, that will be 3, 3, 3 of 3. And so I'd go over there and I'd do it again. Boom, 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 boom. And like this went on and on. This is like, I don't even know why I did it. Well, doctors told me later, because I was sexually abused, I was mentally abused. My dad was an alcoholic and he liked to kick the crap out of the dog and us, you know. I was the youngest brother of 4 brothers. Any young brothers out there? Any baby brothers out there? Ooh, yeah, we start young, right? Keeping up with the big dogs. And so, you know, crap rolled downhill at my house. You know, I come from a long line of lunatics. My dad was an outlaw biker from a branded motorcycle club in California. And my mom was like this Catholic that no matter what you said, she could see the bad in it, right? It's like, hey, mom, we're going to go like on this trip with our friends up to the mountains. Oh, be careful driving. There's crashes, head-on collisions. You know, hey, mom, I'm going to get a cell phone. Oh, don't get a cell phone, please. People die all the time. So like, it was like programmed into me, this trippy deal. And I used to joke around and act like we'd play this game in the car called, I used to tell people we used to play a game called, Can You Believe It? You know, like, or What If? That's what we used to call it. What if I got cancer on my back and my stomach started eating itself and I fell off of a cliff? And everyone would be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I joke around because every now and then someone would get in the car and they'd be like, what if we found $1 billion? And everyone in my family would be like, oh, come on, kid. That's impossible. You know, that's impossible. No one's ever going to find $1 billion. But then the next person would be like, what if my whole body got burned in a fire and then someone dropped me in rubbing alcohol? You know, it's just like, that's just how it was in my family, you know? So I was raised that way, and so I questioned everything, man. I cried in first grade, cried in second grade. I promised I wouldn't cry in third grade, and I cried the first day of third grade, right? And I was so bummed because I knew at that point that no one was going to respect me, you know? No one was going to respect me. So who I really am is the guy that's scared that his mom's not going to come home from work because she's going to get in a fiery crash. I'm scared that the plane's going to go down. Don't even know anyone on it, but the plane's going to go down. The plane's going to go down. You know, I'm a 9-year-old, just complete nervous wreck. You know, missing cracks, superstitious. Who's superstitious? Dude, I was like the most superstitious kid on the planet. I was like walking down the street like this, you know. So I'm broken from the beginning, guys. And so that's who I really am. And so that led me into molding the shadow self that I wanted to present to all of you guys. It got me covered in tattoos, you know. I just knew, man, if I hung out with the wrong people and I had the tattoos, that you might stay away from me. And I got this idea. I'll go to a boxing gym. I'll learn how to fight because I'm scared to death of fighting. You know, my brothers beat me up all the time. My brothers were outlaws, and they had one rule, that they were the only ones allowed to beat me up in town, right? And I felt really bad for people that accidentally beat up their little brother and have them find out. So a lot of times I'd get bullied, and being as sensitive as I was, I didn't even want to tell my brothers I was getting bullied because I was afraid that my brothers were going to hurt the people that were bullying me. That's who I really am. That's who I am at the core of my being. And I spent most of my life standing on the front lines trying to convince everybody that I wasn't afraid when I was terrified of everything. And I did things that I would never do in my right mind, you know? Things that give me cringers. You guys know what cringers are? You know? I'll tell you about one of my cringers. I shared a needle with a bum behind a dumpster, and that was a cringer to me, right? Because every time I'd be like watching a movie, I remember one time I was watching Dances with Wolves, and I remembered like how dirty that dude was and sharing a needle with him, and I went, ugh, ugh, right? And we have those cringers, and we get them, and we build them up. Like, we build this whole arsenal of cringers, right? It's like, it's not just sharing a needle with a bum behind the dumpster. It's beating up my kid the wrong way because I'm pissed off, you know? It's shaking around my wife. It's all the things that I hated about my dad coming to the surface, man, you know? So I created the shadow self. Who's going to be in here at Thanksgiving? Anyone? Okay, good. Be glad about it and embrace it because this is the last Thanksgiving you have to be away from your family. You know, if you're going to be in here on Thanksgiving or Christmas, man, get grateful about it because this can be the last Thanksgiving that you're not with your family. Because see, what I would always do is I would say like, I'm not going to go to treatment until after Thanksgiving because I have to be with the family, you know? And I'd never make it to Thanksgiving. And then I'd feel so bad about not making it to Thanksgiving that I'd have to wait until after Christmas because I got to make up for missing Thanksgiving. And a lot of times I wouldn't make it to Christmas either. And then, you know how it goes. January 1st is right around the corner. Who wants to get sober between Christmas and January 1st? You know? So I was really good at getting sober. Like, literally. Like, I could get sober 2 times in 1 football game. Like, I knew how to get sober. Like, I knew how to get sober, dang it. Man, and I'd go to treatment centers and I would get sober. And then I would go out and I'd build up some spiritual juice because I always dove all in. You know, I was one of the smart guys that when I'd go to treatment, I'd dive all in because I realized at one point that just by going to treatment, the people that hated me would start like, yeah, I still hate you, man, but good luck. Click. Right? I was already getting the benefits of sobriety just by showing up at treatment. People were starting to come out of the woodworks and my wheels would spin. I'd be like, man, I got these guys. You know, I got them. If I get 90 days, I'm sure I'll be able to squeeze a car out of somebody in the family, right? It's not going to look nice, but I don't care. I don't need to look nice. You know, I need car, right? I didn't need any of that stuff, man. I definitely didn't need any money in my pocket. I was so used to being a bottom feeder. By the time I got sober and started saving money, I didn't need money. And I know a lot of us go through this because the numbers are skewed. They say only 10% of you guys are going to make it. And it's crap. 100% of you guys can make it if you dive all into the work. If you get into the big book, if you become part of the no matter what club, right? I remember when someone told me that. They're like, Drew, you got to be part of the no matter what club. And I was like, the no matter what club? It just sounded so lame, right? But there's something special about being part of the no matter what club. Because when you're part of the no matter what club, that means you're not going to drink no matter what. And if you're not going to drink or use no matter what, it doesn't matter what happens in your life. It would be like walking around going like this, oh, man, I wish there was like this stuff called heroin on the planet. I know it doesn't exist, but it would just be like so cool and like tripping on it and not going to work because I knew there was something out there. Now, no one would do that, right? I hope not. You know, nowadays you never know. They have treatment centers for the internet, you know. Like, just when you thought your problems got bad, imagine if you couldn't get away from Tinder long enough to go to work, you know? It happens. It happens. Or gaming, you know? Or gaming. So let me tell you what's wrong with that. What's wrong with that is that when I use love, it creates an endorphin in my mind, okay? Anger, love, jealousy, anything that creates artificial endorphins in my mind is something that my brain's trying to replace what I used to get out of getting loaded. So when I stick a needle in my arm or I take a drink off a bottle or I hit a pizzo or whatever I'm into, right, I produce endorphins in my brain that I cannot mimic with real life stuff. There's not a marketing tool powerful enough. There's not an energy drink strong enough to produce that. And so my brain starts playing tricks. It starts getting restless, irritable, and discontent. So that's what I was talking about. When I come into treatment is when I got to get sober. Why do I got to get sober? Because I become so restless and irritable and when I drink, I end up with legal problems, financial problems, family problems. Can you guys relate? Okay. Now, if I didn't have legal problems, financial problems, and family problems, I wouldn't even get sober to begin with. Let me open up your eyes to something, guys. We're the largest club on the planet of people who didn't want to be members. No one came into AA and was like, oh, wow, Sunday night, I can't wait to go down to Austin Recovery and share my story. Like, no one does that. Everyone comes in here and thinks, wow, it's a death sentence. I got to go to meetings for the rest of my life. What about the people that are really, really bad alcoholic and drug addicts, and they just find these ways not to relate to the other people? They're like, oh, no, no. I'm not like them. Like, I'm an overeater. Okay, I was a boxer when I was a kid because I was scared to fight, but it bred all of these terrible eating habits, right? We weren't allowed to eat. We were always cutting weight. And so by the time I could eat, I was like, man, I want to eat, right? And so I spent about 12 years cutting weight, and drugs helped a lot in situations like that. But to this day, I have food problems, and I'll go to an OA meeting, and I'll walk out of there going, I'm nothing like them, when I'm exactly like them. Everything about them, everything everybody says, I'm exactly like. I have all of those bad habits. And I walk out of there and I think, man, not me. Not me because I don't want it to be me. Who doesn't want to be an alcoholic? Who doesn't want to be an addict? I get it, man. No one wanted to be. And this ends up being the best thing that ever happened to you. So what happens is I end up with all these problems. I have to get sober. If I don't get sober, I'm either going to kill myself, I'm going to kill you. Those are my options. Who's been there? Can you guys relate? Yeah. So what do? We get sober. But when we get sober, we just taken away the very thing that stopped me as a kid from going, the plane's going to go down. My mom's going to get in a fiery crash. We're going to Disneyland. What? I'm going to die. God, please don't let me die. God, please don't let me die. Just let me stay alive for 2 weeks. Like, that's how it is in my head. Loud. And it's rolling. And it's loud. And it's loud. And it's loud. And it's scary. And then I take a drink or I take a shot or I take a hit. And for the first time, I'm not afraid anymore. You know, I don't know if that's your story, but that's mine. I finally wasn't afraid, and I was terrified of everything. So it worked. I stopped worrying if my mom was going to come home. I just didn't care anymore. You know, I really didn't care. And if you have a lot of crap that you've created in your life, I get it, man. Because as the longer we stay out there, the more wreckage we create in our lives. And what happens is that we need more of this, to take the pain away. To take the pain away. So if I don't get 100% into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and become part of the No Matter What Club, what happens is I become restless, irritable, and discontent. And I need tangible evidence of that, because I can tell you all day, hey, guys, you're going to be restless, irritable, and discontent because we just took away your solution. But I got to tell you, what is restless? Like, restless is like, I'm going to sit down here and, like, when you first get here, you know how it is. Oh, I want to be smoking a cigarette. So you go out and smoke a cigarette. And you're like, oh, man, no, I'm kind of itchy. I want to go lay down in bed. And you go down, you lay down in bed, and you're like, oh, dude, I can't sleep, man. Is there a movie on? I want to go watch TV. And you go watch TV, and you're like, I need a cigarette. And you walk outside, and you get a cigarette. And it's just like, boom, 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 ping pong, right? Restless. Completely restless. That would be restless. Irritable is the next step. And irritable is when, like, your supersonic senses come back. Your idiot radar, right? They're like, dude, that guy's an idiot. The counselor, total fool, right? Everybody, the guy I liked yesterday is all of a sudden a total idiot. It's bugging me. I don't like the way that guy chews his food. Man, it's bugging me. It's bugging me. That's the other side of restless, right? You become restless, and then you become irritable, and everything bothers you, and you have superhuman power all of a sudden. It's like taking a hit of crack, right? It's like all of a sudden your ears work. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know? I don't want to sneak up on the peephole anymore, damn it. You know? That's where my life goes. My universe becomes so small. I always ask people, do you want to be rich? You want $1 million? And everyone's like, yeah, I want $1 million. And it's like, what we're offering you is way more than $1 million. We're offering you something that you don't even know exists. You know, some of you guys do. That's why you guys are here. You know, because what I'd do is I'd come into a place like this and I'd find God, clean house, help myself. Find God, clean house, help myself. Find God, clean house, help myself. And everyone's like, Drew, you got to help others. I'm like, what's in it for Drew? What are you talking about? I'm doing my homework in the big book. I'm at Austin Recovery because I need to be at Austin Recovery. And then someone like, you know, it took a few places like this. And then it took like a really expensive place where some dude came up and whacked me on the head with the big book. He's like, 50 grand, bam, take it, 50 grand. Like, I mean, dude, you don't got to pay 50 grand for your big book. What you got to do is get into the big book, because you can go to Passages Malibu and pay $90,000 a month. And guess what? They smack you on the butt with the big book and say, hey, go to a meeting, help others. You know, that's the treatment. You can get that right here. You can start helping other people right here. You can make a decision tonight that you don't want to be in Austin Recovery for you anymore. That you want to be in Austin Recovery for the next guy coming in. That you want to help somebody else, because it starts there. Even if you don't believe it, because you can't believe it, because it doesn't exist in your mind. It doesn't exist. How can helping others, how can giving make it so I can receive? Like, you have to just do it, and you have to just trust me. On page 337 in the big book on the third edition, it says that if I put the program of Alcoholics Anonymous first, everything second in my life will become first class. Okay? And that's why I came out here, because it happened to me. But I had to put Alcoholics Anonymous first in my life. It couldn't be second. You know, everyone along the way, they were like, hey, dude, if you put your job in front of AA, it's going to be the first thing you lose when you get loaded. And I'm like, yeah, maybe you, not me. Boom. Get loaded. What's the first thing I lose when I get loaded? My job. You know, my family, real soon after that. You know, because at face value, I'd never let like a little bag, I definitely wouldn't let another man take my wife, my kids, my shelter without putting up a fight. But I'll let a little bag of dope do it every time. It's the weirdest thing. It is so weird. Do you know that a rat will bite its arm off to get to the dope stash? Like when they tie up like a little rat's arm in the lab, he'll bite his arm off. That's what we're dealing with, guys. We're dealing with something that serious, that a rat will bite its own body off to get to the dope stash. And it's sketchy, and it's tough. So I commend all of you guys for at least taking this step. Now, if you guys have the guts to get all into Alcoholics Anonymous, then your life will take off like a rocket ship, I promise. And I can't do it for you. I wish I could. I mean, geez, I come out to places like this, and I see people, I'm like, man, I want to do it for you so bad. I want to do it for you so bad, but I can't, you know? You got to do it for your own self. And you got to just trust me. You know, one of the things that made it hard for me to get all into Alcoholics Anonymous is I was terminally cool. Straight up. Terminally cool. Like, I was so cool, it almost killed me several times. See, my pride would tell me what I think that you think is more important than what I believe in my inner being. My pride would tell me that I think you think. See, that, let me break down pride and self-esteem really quick. Self-esteem is what I truly think of me, okay? My pride is what I think other people think of me. It's not even what they really think of me. See, my brain, its job is to think. Half of my brain is manufacturing crap, and the other half is buying it. And I'm constantly lying to myself because that's my brain's job, right? Now, I know that, but I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm going to trust my gut on this one. And I know my brain is a thinking organ, and I know it's feeding me garbage, but I'll be the first one to turn around and go, no. It's God's will. It's what I want, right? See, I thought when things were going my way, it was God's will. And when things weren't going my way, it wasn't God's will. Like, that's how blind I was to the whole deal. Like, I would literally think, oh, this is going my way. It's God's will, you know? Your life starts right now. Anything that you ever did before this moment, just chalk it up as a victory. Any opportunities that you think you lost, it's all garbage. It's your brain lying to you. The opportunities are about to come. See, Helen Keller said that when God shuts one door, another door opens. See, no one ever even gives Helen Keller credit for it, right? She's the one that came up with the line. And they always leave the last line off of it, the end of it. So the line says when God opens up, when God closes a door, another door opens. But the other part of it is that most people are so devastated by the door that shut, they can't see the door that opened. And so God doesn't care how long you want to keep your hand in the jam. See, because God only comes where he's invited. God will let you walk into things, man. If you come into a place like this and all you want is God to fix your drug problems, then guess what? You'll probably get some relief from drugs and alcohol while you're here. But if you don't invite God into all the other areas of your life, you know, I had to invite God into my sex problems. I had to invite God into my food problems, into my drug problems, into my anger problems, into my terminal coolness. You know, it was so hard for me to stop being worried about what you guys thought, you know? So I always like, and I hate it when there's men and women in the room, just because a big point of this whole deal is that your life starts now. So believe that you are meant to be here. And sometimes the men and the women, they'll take that out of the context. They'll be like, see, I told you, we're supposed to be together. Me and you. What are the odds, right? You're not even from the same state. God wanted us together. So we call that endorphin produced by the other, by your partner or your sexual, when you are attracted to people. We call it the love bug because it produces an endorphin in your brain that is so powerful. I mean, let's create some tangible evidence behind the love bug, okay? You talk to somebody all night long until 6 in the morning. You guys have all seen it, right? Whether you work in a hair salon or you work on a construction site or wherever you work, you know, the guy's like, hey, man, I talked to her till 6 in the morning, man. I got a half hour of sleep. He's got two bags of concrete over his shoulder skipping. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we talked until 6 in the morning. Only got a half hour of sleep, you know? The love endorphin will do amazing things. It'll almost make you think you're not broken, you know? And it's not sustainable, you know, because what's a real addict do? If you're a real addict and alcoholic, then you'll find someone to kiss you on the neck to make you think that you're not broken. And very soon after, you'll look for someone else to kiss you on this side. That's what we do. We're never satisfied. See, the alcoholic's never satisfied, you know? So how about like praying for God to bring the right person in your life and quit looking for it and start trying to help other people around you? Because you have a really good opportunity here to help other people that are coming in. Who are senior residents? The guys in treatment right now, senior residents. Girls, senior residents. Good. Senior would be like you're about to leave within the next 7 days. Okay, good. Do not have one foot inside this place and one foot outside. Make sure that you take advantage of all the time that you have left here and use it to help as many people walking through the door, because this is a scary place to walk into. And no matter if you're a senior resident or a new resident, everyone is afraid when they walk through these doors. I don't care how tough you are. You know, you're walking into a whole group of people that have already been bonding and jiving together for the last who knows how long. You know, you have no idea what to expect. Love those people and let them know that they're welcome. See, what's going to happen is that when we take away our solution and we become restless, irritable, and discontent, King Baby shows up. You guys know who King Baby is? Anyone got any experience with King Baby or King Babette? You girls might know her by. Well, King Baby is the person that bangs on their high chair and wants what they want when they want it and aren't always reasonable, you know? And I do it. You know, King Baby shows up. See, King Baby shows up when my heart rate raises above 95 beats per minute. Okay? If I have 95 beats per minute, humans have what's called an executive frontal cortex in the front of their brain. All mammals have it. Makes them thinkers. Right? Every other animal has a limbic system. And we have the limbic system, but we also have the frontal cortex. And so when our heart rate beats up faster than 95 beats a minute, all the blood from our frontal cortex sucks into our limbic system, and we start making decisions. And there's some of you, it might be like 98, 99. The deal is this. When I feel a threat, my blood pressure rises, and it creates a fight or flight reaction. And that fight or flight reaction is my limbic system working, not my orbital frontal cortex where my executive function is. Now, in the front of my brain, and it's not developed until you're in your 20s, so if you're, like, not in your 20s yet, you kind of got to, like, you have a slide, you know? But that part of your brain is your decider. That's the one that stops you from making dumb decisions. There's three things that can hurt that part of your brain. One is blunt trauma. So a lot of us have been whacked in the head. I know I've been whacked in the head. I've crashed on my skateboard. So if you've ever been hit in the head hard, been in a car accident, another one's abuse. You ever been abused sexually, physically, mentally? Someone yelling at you? It breaks that down. And guess what the other one is? Drug and alcohol addiction. So we have like some triple winners in here. I know I'm one. Triple winner. So if you already have that in your life, it's going to be even harder for you, but it's okay. It's okay as long as you get all into the 12 steps. So in step one, it says that I'm powerless over alcoholism. My life's become unmanageable. So I was flipping lights my whole life, and my life, I can admit, was unmanageable from the gate. Do you agree? I was counting everything, I was freaking out about crack. So I'm unmanageable, right? I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. Can you guys agree that my life was unmanageable? It was. Big time. It was big time unmanageable. And so I had a sponsor that said, Drew, you're not powerless over alcohol anymore. You quit drinking alcohol. And you prayed for God to come in and fill you with your love and light. You know what you're powerless over? I said, what? He goes, your first thought. Because you go to treatment, you get all on fire for AA, and you get into the book, and you get out, and you start driving down the street, and your first thought takes you away from the program. The program gives you everything you need. And your first thought starts thinking about things that you want, and it takes you away from the thing that gave you everything that you need. And I said, well, how do I combat the first thought? And he goes, you got to combat it with God. And I said, but I don't believe in God. I don't like God. I don't believe in God. So what else is there? And he said, no. He said, you got to combat it with God, even if you don't believe. He said, do you believe it's possible? And I said, I do believe it's possible. He said, oh, good. We just did step two. You don't know it yet, but we just did step two. Do you believe it's possible? And I said, yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's possible, right? Like, it's possible I could win the lottery 1,000 times in a row, too. It's possible. So I said, it's possible. And he said, you're well on your way. You believe it's possible. You know that you're powerless over the first thought, and you've admitted that your life's unmanageable. So every time I called my sponsor and had a problem with someone else, he said, whoa, is your life unmanageable? And I said, yeah. And he goes, why are you trying to manage someone else's life? Like, you can't even manage yours. Why are you tripping? So anyway, that was step one and two for me. In the big book on page 47 and 48, or 46 and 47, there's three as soon as statements, okay? As soon as I rip this shirt off and throw it on the ground, what's up? It's going to get dirty, right? So it's cause and effect. As soon as I believe that it's possible that God exists, God enters. I don't have to believe he exists. I have to believe it's possible that he exists, okay? And if you know that God exists, you're well on your way. Start using this tool, because I was always looking for a shortcut in life. I wished my name was Ed. My name's Drew. I wish my name was Ed. Okay? I used to write D-R-E-W and then get to the test questions. And I was like, man, dude, if my name was Ed, I could just go E-D and then do the test questions. Like, that's how broken I am. Like, I wanted the shortcut so bad I wished that my name was Ed. You know? And if there's an Ed out there, I'm not clowning on you. What I'm doing is just trying to make a point that I would go to any lengths to take the shortcut. And that type of behavior just kind of boom, boom, boom. So as soon as we can believe that it's possible, man, God will enter your life. God only comes where he's invited. If you have problems outside of drugs and alcohol, start inviting God into those areas of your life. Just try it. Because for the guy that wished his name was Ed, found the biggest shortcut in life. And the biggest shortcut was relying on God and working with other alcoholics. See, because I was having trouble with the whole service thing. And it was easy for me to know what pain my brothers have been through, right? They asked Mother Teresa, can you help an alcoholic? And she said, no, I can't. And they're like, what do you mean you can't help an alcoholic? They said, only an alcoholic can help an alcoholic. You know? Only an alcoholic knows what it's like to be losing their whole family. You know? And not be able to stop drinking. Only an alcoholic knows what it's like to get their license back at 38, man. Right? Like, you walk into like a normal place and be like, dude, I just got my license back. They're like, what do you mean? They're like, I'm 38. I just finally got my license back. And like, you're going to have no friends. You do that in AA and everyone's like, yeah! Oh, yes! You know? You know? People are like, oh, I haven't talked to my kid in 5 years. And people in AA are like, yeah! You know? You walk into like a Tupperware party and you're like, hey, this is like a cool party, but I just talked to my kid. I haven't talked to him in 5 years. And people trip, man. You know? A lot of the world doesn't understand what it's like to lose your kid because you can't stop putting poison in your body. That's what we're dealing with. You know, everyone looks at people, they're like, oh yeah, that person's schizophrenic. Oh yeah, that person's bipolar. Oh, they got multiple personalities. And they think that's a mental illness. Well, check it out. If you're sitting in this room and you've admitted you're an alcoholic, then you got alcoholism, man. It's way worse than any of that put together. We're trying to kill ourselves slowly. You know how many alcoholics and drug addicts are sitting in prison for the rest of their life and can't even remember what they did? It's just bad luck, right? I don't know. It's not going to be bad luck for anyone in this room if it happens to you because you've just heard. You know. It won't be bad luck. And everyone always says, like, oh, I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who's heard that? And their name is, I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous! No, dude. I earned my seat in the Texas Department of Corrections, and I'm lucky to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? Like, that's the seat I really earned, and somehow God made it so I could be here. So I go into step three, and it says that we make a decision. And I always hated all those things, the three frogs on a log. You guys heard it? There's three frogs on a log. One decides to jump off. How many frogs are on the log? You know? Yeah, three. I was like, oh, I hate that. You know, because I was fighting everything. I walked in, and I was like, it says, go about it half the zeal in Dr. Bob's story, and you'll be successful. Half measures availed us nothing. This makes no sense, coach. And I slapped the book, right? Say, don't take inventory, but hang out the inventory. I used to call my first sponsor coach. I'd be like, what's up, coach? What's up, man? Doesn't make no sense, coach. And he's like, I've told you not to call me coach. I just call him coach because I was just a jerk. But anyway, he says, you know, the people that are working the steps are the winners. That's how you know who the winners are. Because if I judge somebody today, I'm going to miss out on someone wonderful tomorrow if they're doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. If they're not working the steps, there's not going to be any change. If they work the steps, it's mathematical law that there will be a transformation. It's impossible not to. It's like taking somebody that and putting them in the gym for 2 hours a day with a trainer, right? 6 days, 7 days a week, 2 hours a day, 6 months. What do you get? Transformation. You get transformation is what you get. It doesn't matter if that person eats donuts all day. There will be a transformation. Do you believe it? Yes. You have to because we see it with our eyes. It's fact. It is fact. Now, why wouldn't you believe that if you put 2 hours a day into your recovery for 6 months, 7 days a week? It's hard for us to believe that there would be a transformation. Why? Because we can't see it? Because we can't use it? Can't like walk down the street with it? What up? You know? Yeah, you can walk down the street with it, man. Where else can you go and be a total terror and a tornado ripping and roaring through people's lives and actually do a few simple things that a fifth grader could do? Literally. A fifth grader could do this work and end up being a healer. Like, where else can you go? See, only the alcoholic can live two lives. You know, all these other people out there, and there's little machines out there driving. There's millions of people on the freeway right now with their own little problems. They're going to their own little thing, and they go to work, and they eat, and they don't even know we exist. They don't even know that we're having this meeting tonight. It's the furthest thing from their mind, us talking tonight here. Do you agree? But they're there, right? We will not have the opportunity to connect with those people. But you have the opportunity to connect with each other here. This is your tribe. We don't always love our... we don't always like our family, but we love them, right? So whatever's going on in here, the message is give each other a break. Whatever's irritating you, remember, we've just taken away your solution. You become restless, irritable, and discontent. Don't become discontent. Catch it before you become discontent. Because by the time you're discontent, you're blowing up bridges, man. You know what I mean? You're walking out of this place not because you're mad at the person that you're mad at anymore. You're walking out of this place because you're mad at yourself. For treating another person the way you're treating them because you're realizing, oh, crap, King Baby showed up again, you know? And I'm too embarrassed about it. I'm too embarrassed. When I get embarrassed, I do stupid stuff. You know, I remember one time I was at a treatment center, and I was like, dude, I'm out of here. And I packed everything up in a garbage bag, and it was downtown San Diego, and I had it over my shoulder, and I walked out, and it was on Island Street. And I don't know if you guys know San Diego, but southeast San Diego, and it's a very, very rough part of San Diego. And I had my garbage bag over my shoulder, and I walked out knowing didn't want to go out. But dang it, I told everybody I was leaving. And where I'm from, if you stay after you say that, no one's going to respect you. And I walked out of that place with a garbage bag, and the place was like, This place makes it look like this place is like heaven compared to that place. A bum died to me one time when I was in detox. I had another bum one time pooping his pants for like 3 days in the bed right next to me. You know, I was like, ah. You know? You guys got it made here. And value the people that are around you, okay? So anyway, so I become restless, irritable, discontent. Where was I? I was somewhere else right before we got into this. What's up? Don't let it get right before that. In the gym. Transformation. So you have to believe. No, the free three frogs on a log. Good job. Thank you. Okay, we were actually at three frogs on a log, and I hated that, right? Because I didn't understand it. See, because making a decision takes no action. Action creates momentum. By the time we get to step four, we haven't done anything but admitted we're alcoholic, which is gnarly, right? Because if you admit you're an alcoholic to your family that you always drink around, it's going to be kind of weird when you're drinking at the barbecue, right? And they're like, dude, didn't you just admit you were an alcoholic? So it's hard, and it's a big step. So if you've admitted you're an alcoholic, my hat's off to you, because that's the first big step. Is letting everyone know and being transparent, saying, dude, alcohol's poison to me. I can't control myself when I drink it. You know? Step two, you believe that it's possible. You know? Does everyone in here believe it's possible? Everybody? Is there anyone that doesn't believe it's possible? Good. So step three, we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of that possibility. And it's Karate Kid stuff, guys. Like Daniel LaRusso, if he knew he was actually learning how to block, he would have wrecked it. He would have been like, oh, wait, I'm not painting, I'm blocking, right? But Miyagi's like, dude, use the wrist, man. Paint the fence, right? Paint the fence. And so he was like, okay, paint the fence, right? And then you guys know what happened, man. Shoulder was hurting. Got all tough with Mr. Miyagi. Was like, what's up, man? I'm painting, waxing your cars, sanding your floors. And dude, Miyagi, pop, 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 right? He didn't know what he was learning, right? He didn't know what he was learning. And if he would have known, he would have wrecked it. Agreed? So that's how the steps work. Don't get too like lost in your head about it. Just do it. They have a really awesome program here. And it gets you into writing. It gets that pen on the paper. Just do it. Even if you don't believe it's going to work, just do it. And if you're at step three, help somebody with step one, because it starts there. Because by the time you get out of here, you should be able to have helped everybody, or at least somebody, get through each step. Because as you get through one, you know how to get out. You know how to get through it. You don't have to be someone's sponsor to encourage them to do their step work. You know? And if you got people in here that don't want to be here, of course not. No one wanted to be here when they got here. But you guys know how that feels. And some of your senior residents that have been diving all in and getting a little taste of spirituality, you know what I'm talking about. You want to share it with other people, man. You know, and that's why I came out tonight. So step three, I haven't done anything except for make a decision to turn my thoughts and my actions over to the care of a higher power. My will and my life. My thoughts and my actions. Have you guys all made a good step three? Yeah? You guys want to do it together right now and invite God into our thoughts and our actions just for old time's sake? Okay. Repeat after me. God, I invite you into my thoughts and actions. Please give me the courage to invest in my life. Amen. Okay, so we're well on our way. That's what they call having a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So if there's anyone in here that has always been like, oh yeah, I got a treatment, then I'm like, dude, when I'm not in treatment, I'm like, not tripping on AA. Well, those people didn't do what we just did. That's why they don't trip on it. But if you have never done that and you just did it, I'm really glad, because I've just ruined your drinking and drugging permanently. But I didn't do anything. God did it. And what's going to happen is you're going to know. You know, if you jump all into this program, you're going to get a taste of it. So step four creates, it takes action, right? So what's it say? It says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And moral, the root is honesty, is what I've been taught. Okay? Make a fearless and honest inventory of myself, which is difficult because I've spent my whole life creating this image that I want you guys to see. I don't want anyone to know the truth. So usually I do the three-step boogie, right? I'm like, one, two, three, boogie. I don't need this. I got it all, man. I made a decision. God's got me. I'm out. I believe it's possible. See, I don't want to open up the window. What happens when I open up the window and take a look at who I really am? I either want to shut it and run or get loaded, you know, because it's usually so ugly. And the older you get, the longer you stay out there, the worse it gets, you know. Like, I thought sharing a needle with a bum behind a dumpster was, like, my bottom. It wasn't even close. It wasn't even close to my bottom. I wish that was my bottom, man. I wish that was my bottom. So I got to get into action. And action creates momentum. It's like pushing a car, right? When you start pushing a car, you're like, you're like one finger on it, like, I'm pushing the car. Right? It's because the action creates momentum. So you got to get into your fourth step. And you got to just get that pen on paper, man. The quicker you get it on there, the quicker it's going to come out. And don't feel like you got to do it right. There's no wrong way to do it. The only wrong way to do it is not to do it. That's the only wrong way to do it. You know? You got to get that pen on that paper, and you got to just start doing it. And what a fun experience, right? Like, they start in the fourth step. They say, write your grudge list. Like, what alcoholic doesn't want to write their grudge list? Right? Grudge list? Like, that's my specialty. You know? Like, it's a trick, guys. If you knew what we were doing, you wouldn't do it. Or you'd try to figure it out. Yeah, we want you to talk all about the people that you hate. We want you to tell us everything. I tell my guys, I said, I want situational. If you said that you yelled at them, I want to know when, where, and how, and why. What you said. They're like, dude, it's going to be like 17 pages. I'm all, ooh, good. Good. Because when the story's in my head, what did we talk about? My brain's a thinking organ. My head lies. So depending on how much food I have when I tell that story, it's going to affect me a different way. Depending on how much sleep I had the night before, that story's going to affect me a different way. Depending on who I started dating, that story is going to affect me a different way, right? I'm not worried about it anymore because I got the love bug and I'm dancing on clouds. They don't say to not get in a relationship for the first year because they don't want you guys to have any fun. They say don't get in a relationship for the first year because it forces you to be alone. That's a scary feeling, huh? But go to a meeting and then go home and be alone? You know? I'll take anybody. Yeah. So hopefully what you'll do is go home, be alone, and break out your big book and say, God, I'm lonely. And invite God into that loneliness. You know, because once you have God riding with you, you're never alone. You will never have that lonely feeling again. You know? I pushed my family so far away from me so I can drink and use the way I want. And the second the bottle was dry, the second the bag was out, who was I mad at? Oh, yeah, they don't love me. They don't love me. Look, they won't even talk to me. I'd be telling all my friends, they don't even talk to me. Blah, blah, blah. You know? After selling, like, the fourth car. My brother's doing it right now, right? My parents just gave him a car. I was super poor when I grew up, by the way. My mom didn't have a car till I was four. My older brother's 3 years older than me. And we used to get a quarter for allowance. And just where she bought her house in California, like, she fought tooth and nail to carry it. She paid $29,000 for the house. And 20 years later, the house sold for $750,000. Crazy, huh? So we were, like, super poor, right? And then my mom still used to being super poor, that, like, the next house she bought, she, like, doesn't owe anything on it. And she's, like, still super poor, right? But it's cool. She made some bad investments, whatever, none of my business. Okay? But I was super poor. So I was used to being a bottom feeder, man. You know? Oh, sorry, I do that sometimes. I lose my train of thought. So I write down the list, and I get everybody on there, and I get the story out of my head. See, my brain's going to lie to me. It's going to tell me the story different ways every single time. I have to get it on paper. Sometimes the act of just putting it from here onto paper will be enough to detangle whatever's got me caught up in my mind. Okay? It's a very, very powerful tool to get it out of here and here. It's like a rapper, right? You got a freestyle rapper. He's like, yeah, yeah, boo-boo-boo, boo-boo-boo, boo-boo-boo-boo-boo-boo-boo. And you're like, hey, dude, write it down. He's like, uh-uh. The second I write it down, everyone's going to know what I'm saying. What if they don't like it? I'm a freestyle rapper. You know? I've done it. I've asked people, write it down. They won't write it down. As soon as you write it down, that's what you're saying. So whatever story is getting you all twisted up in your head that you've been fighting and just loving, right? You've just been loving the way that feels, because when we quit drinking and using, what do? We try to produce endorphins. So if I can't get it through the love bug because you just told me I can't date people for a year, guess where else I'm going to get it? I'm going to start telling that story. I'm going to start telling that story and twist that story into a tornado. You know? Not only am I going to tell that story, but I'm going to start causing drama with you over there. Well, that creates endorphins in my head too, you know? Red flag, everybody. If someone comes up to you and says, I'm going to tell you something, but don't tell anybody. That's a recovery red flag, they call it. Okay? So you're going to tell me something, and there's no way for me to, like, cross-reference the crap? I'm in. Tell me. You know? It's crazy, right? Watch out for that stuff. And love each other, man. Why not? So we've just taken away the solution, and people are going to be restless, irritable, and discontent. That means that somebody's going to come up and be like a total, yeah. That means that every one of us at some points are going to become lame. We're going to do something stupid that we aren't going to feel like someone else would respect us for. And so if this isn't a place where we can cut each other a break, then where is? If this can't be a safe spot where our tribe can come in and we can, like, totally have King Baby show up and wake up the next day and say, hey man, I'm getting into my step work without the judgment of each other, right? If we can find a way to unite and take each other in and go, dude, it's cool. You just had your solution taken away. Let's get into the big book. Let's read the steps. Yeah, I know you're mad. It's okay. You know, let people go through it and love them anyway and give them a break, because this is your tribe. There's a lot of alumni that come back to this meeting. Why? Because they want to help you. You know why? Because they found the magic. It's a magical program. So you get through step four and you get into step five. And it's very important that you share that with another alcoholic. In ancient samurai teachings, you can't even become a true samurai warrior until you share your deepest, darkest secrets with another warrior. This isn't stuff that, like, Bill W. made up, man. These are, like, time-proven processes, you know? We go to meetings every day. Why? So we can create space for God to work. You know, if you feel like you got to go to a meeting every day when you get out of here for you, then you didn't get it while you were here, man. You weren't helping other people while you were here. You were still trying to get what you could get out of Austin Recovery. What can you give to Austin Recovery while you're here? You know, trust me, the things that make this program look so simple, there's so much work behind the scenes that make this thing look flawless, like all the policies and all the rules and all this stuff. It's not because they don't want you to have fun. It's because they want to keep you safe, because someone else made a mistake and had to go through it. And there's 1,000 reasons that it's not even worth the staff telling you guys about. You know what I mean? This is a great place. I go to a lot of different places. One of my favorite places in Austin. You know, there's a lot of good recovery here. But the recovery is only as good as you guys share with each other, man. So I'm getting out of time here, so I'm going to just bang really quick into step six. Because at step six, it says that we are entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character. When we do a fifth step with our sponsor and we tell them the stuff about us and he looks at our list and he connects some dots. See, humans have pattern recognition. So he's going to start connecting dots. And a lot of times, it's going to look the same for a lot of stuff. You guys will see. I don't want to blow the surprise. But he's going to point out some of your character defects. You know, it might be control. It might be jealousy. It might be anger. It might be self-centeredness, entitlement. Like, there's a bunch of them, right? And you find it as you do the work with the guy. And then you pray to God, and then you invite God into those areas of your life. So the things that your sponsor writes down, you say, okay, God, I'm entirely ready to invite you into my jealousy. You know, I'm entirely ready to invite you into my sex problems because I can't be alone. You know? It's funny, but it's not. It's funny. We do a lot of stupid stuff, you know, because we're scared to believe that God is powerful and that God wants us to have a good life. So anyway, I'm going to shut up now. Thank you so much for letting me come out here. I love you guys.